7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 30 of Color of Magic, your magic podcast, where we try to raise the profile of people that are generally less visible in our community. I am your host, Daquan Watson, and my co-host here, as always, Brian Allen. How you doing, man?
Oh, we're doing okay. Texas is in, I guess, week one of opening some things. So, or I guess it's supposed to be week two now, I guess. It's confusing, but yeah, we're starting to... Apparently, movie theaters will be able to open soon with 25% capacity. So, yeah, go check that
out. Yeah, I'll be interested to see how that works out. We can talk about that a little bit more in a segment we have later in the show where we talk about kind of what organized play would look like. But that's definitely something we can touch on for sure. But yeah, as far as what I've had going on, I've just been hammering stuff out on my YouTube channel, making sure there's a bunch of material over there. And doing a lot of Twitch stuff. My Twitch sessions have been going quite a bit longer than normal. Mostly because I've kind of gotten into this format where I'm playing for 2 or 3 hours. And then we kind of get into this just chatting mode. And people are asking questions and we're kind of talking about different stuff. And it's cool because I have, because of the time I get on at night, I get players from kind of all over the world. So like my last, on Tuesday when I was on, I had people from Australia, New Zealand, Germany, Argentina, you know, like they were just all over the place. And it's weird because all different time zones. But it's been cool to hear about how they're dealing with their lack of interaction for gaming, what's going on in their local pools, you know, how they're doing as far as eradicating the virus or not. So it's been educational and fun in that regard. So it's been pretty cool.
I've had the same thing where, you know, of course, I do a lot of sports games. So we're all just kind of talking. But of course, there's been a lot of, you know, news breaking and when is anybody ever going to play these things again, as we're going to talk about. So it's just the chatting sometimes is even more fun, you know, than the playing of the games, because that's what people are there for. You could watch anybody play a game, but to find a community where you like talking to everybody, where you have those good discussions about things, that's what it's all about.
And, you know, I don't think people are aware, because we talk about Twitch for gaming, obviously, where you're playing like video games and whatever. But the fastest growing section on Twitch is actually the just chatting section. And it's funny because I wouldn't have thought that, you know, but you go in and Twitch has really become almost a performance platform for all kinds of stuff. I mean, you have artists, painters. You know, like I said, I found the Bob Ross channel on there, where it literally just plays Bob Ross 24/7 and it always has like 1,000 viewers.
Because if you think about it, talk shows are one of the oldest formats in the business. You just need a host, a microphone, and a topic that's trying to talk about. And if you're good at it, viewers ensue.
For sure. For sure. So, yeah, it's definitely been interesting to see how everybody's planning to get back to, I guess we'll call it the gathering portion of Magic with all this stuff going on. And I don't even know, you know, what the best plan or best answer is. You know, I have some feelings about it, but, you know, I'm kind of leaving it to the professionals to tell me otherwise at this point. And it's tough too, because, you know, we talked about last week how individual game stores are doing a lot to try to weather the storm. Good news, though, one of the local stores did say, despite the issues that have happened, they're actually got to the point that at the end of this month, they will be ahead of last year's goal, only by a couple $100s. But they've actually, even with all that, still managed to weather the last like 6 weeks or so to generate enough money.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah, they're really putting in work, really putting in work. So people are finding creative ways to still push through. And that says a lot, you know. But it's also like I've told people before too, is I think I said this on my stream Monday or Tuesday night. One of the hard realities I think we have to deal with is that there were already, in some markets, too many game stores.
True.
And several of them were not great. even beyond just not being of high quality, a lot of them are underfinanced. They didn't have the proper expertise. You know, the list goes on. And part of that's just barrier to entry is low in the industry. And honestly, to some extent, as patrons and constituents of these places, we don't hold them to higher standards enough sometimes. But with that, I think the stores that were quality or are quality and stayed on top of things and, you know, were able to sell stuff online and were getting their deliveries out, you know, still taking pre-orders, doing business, I think those stores are going to be the ones that survive. And ultimately, they're probably going to be better because of it. Because think about this, like, say a big market that has 20 stores. If 8 of them go away, well, the majority of those players are still going to continue playing and go somewhere. Now, not all of them, mind you. Some will just quit because, like, their favorite store, their favorite people aren't around anymore. And that's understandable. But even if, say, half of those people go somewhere, well, those other stores are going to be significantly healthier after all this because those new players start shopping with them.
Definitely.
So the individual stores we get could be better, potentially. It's like one of the many futures I could see with my, the time stone or whatever it is. Yeah.
Sees 14 million futures, doesn't warn us about coronavirus. Yeah,
that's kind of how that worked out, isn't it? But let's move along and get into what did we learn this week, which, by the way, I need to find a little ditty to go with that so we can, like, I can have that on the soundboard too. But anyway, what did you learn last week, Brian?
Well, one of our former guests, Nessa Meow Meow, is partnered on Twitch, got the big check mark, so congratulations to her.
True. I saw her talking about that on Twitter. She was super excited.
Yeah, we know how hard it is, as we are still chasing that check mark ourselves. So again, congratulations. And if you haven't stopped by her stream, it's great. Please go by there and feel free to tell her that Color of Magic sent you.
I'm telling you, it's all about the kitty rave.
Exactly.
But I will say this too. Like, she went through, I think she, was it 11 or 13 submissions?
I don't remember the exact number, but I know it was a lot.
Yeah, it was over 10 that she had to go through before it finally got approved. And I mean, she said on some, she didn't get definitive reasoning. On one of them, it was that, like, her average was, it met the goal, but because some number of days were supported by people rating her or something, you know, it didn't count one time. And, you know, so there was a lot of weird little factors in there.
It's weird. Many people have applied multiple times, have said, yeah, it doesn't always seem to make sense. One of my favorite stories, a guy, you know, they denied him. So he was one of the ones that didn't get a definitive reason. So he asked, okay, what could I do better? And the next email was your partner. So apparently that's all he had to do was ask. So it's weird.
Well, you know, that kind of fits how, well, not current state of the world, but I've heard previously there were some people who would have issues getting approved for, like, unemployment or Social Security or whatever. And usually if you applied the second time, you would get in. And I guess some number were being denied supposedly because it just kept scammers from participating in the system or whatever. Which is such a weird way to deal with that. But I mean, I guess it's worked this long. If you really needed it, you would go through the effort, do the things they requested or whatever, and then get accepted the next go round.
No one knows what the Matrix is. You have to experience it for yourself or something.
Yeah, for sure. As for what I learned last week, a very interesting thing, a website called the Esports Observer does reports on the health of different games, and I guess they call them as far as their importance and impact in online gaming. And their rankings that they put out had Magic as 11th on their list from the first quarter of this year. Which was pretty cool, you know, because I wouldn't have guessed that necessarily. I mean, if somebody would ask me, like, what I thought, I would have said, I don't know, maybe like 20 or 30.
I think part of the reason it's so high is because if you want to pick sports games, what's the most popular one? I think it's FIFA, but Madden's probably really close. Magic, the gap between them and even the second place card game is ginormous.
Yeah, but they didn't actually, well, because it still had, I think Hearthstone was still in there when I was looking at the list. And there was another card game, I think. But basically, they broke it into tiers. So they had tier one, which was your obvious ones. It was League of Legends, CSGO, Dota, like the ones you expect to be up there. And League of Legends is still the pace setter right now. Still far and away number one, you know, first quarter of this year. Then your second tier was actually a big grouping of other games that are popular. So it was like Rocket League, Fortnite, StarCraft, Hearthstone, Magic, you know, a bunch of those games that kind of like hang around and, you know, Modern Warfare, all kind of hang out at that level.
I'm going to be curious to see next quarter's numbers because, as you probably know, pro football players are playing Madden because they got nothing else to do right now. Pro baseball players are playing It'll Be the Show because they got nothing else to do right now. So the next quarter's numbers are going to be crazy.
Well, here's an interesting thing, right? Because your tier three that they put together was actually Overwatch, FIFA, World of Warcraft, and then whatever the other new Warcraft 3 thing was. The re-released Warcraft 3. I can't remember what they called it. But like that was the ranking. So, and I think people were wondering, like, well, if you see this, how do they measure it, right? Because that seems very awkward that would be, you know, Magic would be 11th. Which, by the way, they were 14th last time. So they came up three spaces on their rankings. But they measured it in a few different things. They were measuring it on active players, hours watched on the various streaming channels, distributed winnings, you know, so if they had big tournaments and they were giving out prizes, concurrent streams, so the number of people that were streaming it at one time, total esports hours watched, so how many people were just viewing it, and then the total number of tournaments that were recorded for each of those games. And I say that because I wanted to point those things out because the numbers are a little bit skewed because obviously with the whole coronavirus thing happening, some of these games had major championship events or whatever that ended up not happening, you know, or major cash prize tournaments ended up not happening because, you know, they get the teams together and there's a dome and there's a little audience and, you know, whatever, but they can't do that obviously. So that all got canceled. And Magic coincidentally got lucky and had one of their big tournaments in the first quarter of the year before everything went down. So they still get credit for that, you know, in these measurements. Now, and that's not me saying like, Arena doesn't deserve to be up there with everything else. But I think the argument could be that people are going to look and say like, well, but here's all these things. These other games must have had a really bad quarter. But it's very possible that Arena just had a really good quarter too. Like everybody's sitting at home, Magic players are drafting, you know, the World Championship had good coverage. You know, like it's very possible that maybe Magic and Arena are just doing well. I mean, hell, even Magic singles with nobody playing Paper Magic right now, the market hasn't fallen out and a bunch of cards have actually gone up in value.
And I guess this quarter would have basically two Magic sets worth of numbers, I guess.
Let's see. January, February, March. Maybe? No, because we got that in April. We got Corey in April.
Wouldn't be featured yet.
Yeah, so wouldn't have that.
Which still, to have even, you know, one set of new product, a lot of games, like, I mean, there ain't going to be a new Madden, you know, until August, so.
True. Very true. I just thought it was an interesting fact, you know, to go back and look at how they did their math, how they figured out who gets ranked where. So it seems like a pretty fair system because they are measuring a lot of different things. So I don't know. It'd be interesting to see how they measure Valorant going into next quarter.
Yeah.
I don't know how that.
Everybody has been streaming that, obviously.
Yeah. And that's a whole kind of separate conversation as far as esports viewing and whatever is concerned, but Valorant's weird. Like, one, I watched a little of it just to see what the hype was about. Like, I'm not a huge first-person shooter fan. That's not going to be the game that gets me to play first-person shooters. There's just so much crap happening on the screen when people are using powers and abilities and colors flying everywhere. Like, that's such a hard product to view right now. The other is you apparently have people that are streaming it that aren't even on. They just have it running reruns or whatever, and people are just watching it so they can try to get beta access key drops. But like, how many people are actually even playing the game or actually truly interested in the game?
I think because Riot has, of course, I say that, then I think of the problems that Valve had with what's the Artifact. So, you know, Valve has a whole bunch of money to throw at a game, but they messed up a lot of things. But if Valorant doesn't just totally implode on itself, it should be fine just because of the money Riot has to throw at any problems that crop up.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I mean, I'm beginning to wonder, and I know we're kind of getting off topic here a little bit, but I'm beginning to wonder if we're getting to the point that first-person shooters or first-person games are starting to wane a little bit.
I think they have, in the sense that, you know, for a while it was really first person. Now it's more battle royale that's popular. Even the Call of Duty has had to say, okay, we're prioritizing battle royale.
Yeah, I mean, because I watched a video recently with Tony Hawk, actually, where he was talking about the whole Tony Hawk Pro Skater franchise and all that, which, hilariously, he was talking about how they were at one meeting, and it was kind of as they were talking about, I think it was Tony Hawk 4 was, it was getting toward the end of production or whatever to go live. And the rep sat down with him and he's like, man, well, you know, things are going better than we anticipated. So that's pretty awesome or whatever. He's like, oh, great. You know, so we just want to make sure we give you a little something and whatever. And he hands him a check and it's apparently a $4 million check. And he lost his mind.
Wow.
But, yeah. So Tony Hawk's doing all right. Like, but one of the things he talked about is, you know, they actually at one point discussed producing more or moving the license to another company or whatever. And people wanted to just prioritize first person shooter style games. So it wasn't worth it to work on an agreement or put in time on another project to not really have it get full support or be promoted the way it should, because it was easier to just make money with first person shooters.
Yeah, and when it happens, sometimes it happens really fast.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think we're in a decent space right now. I think there's at least a good variety of games. And it feels like Arena's kind of finally finding its own, right? Like, we're getting into a world where people are starting to run tournaments regularly online. I mean, some by want, some by need, you know, situation we're in. But you're getting more coverage. You're getting more events happening regularly. I'm seeing a lot more people like coming on and sharing ideas. The streams seem to be consistently drawing more people. So overall, I mean, Magic's in a pretty good place right now, at least till we can get back to, you know, going out to our local stores and playing some Commander games face to face.
Like we talked about, just, you know, timing. Arena happened to have its major launch right before, you know, nobody could leave their house for God knows how long.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, timing is a big deal. Timing is huge.
You couldn't have planned that way because you couldn't have known. Sometimes you just get, you know, I don't want to say lucky because we're talking about a virus, but sometimes just timing is everything.
Oh, for sure. It's kind of like we said, you know, with that whole Tiger King, right? If that didn't come out while people were locked up at home, it would have still been big, but it'd been like half as big as it is now. Though, by the way, have you seen the video on YouTube where a guy recorded a song about Carol Baskins?
No, I need to.
Oh, dude, it is so catchy and dumb, but oh my God, it's so, like, y'all need to look it up. It's a dude, it's a bad, like, country accent doing rap talking about Carol Baskins, and it's only like maybe three lines of lyrics, and then he interlaces like clips in the background from the show or whatever, but it's super well done. Super well done.
And I'm sure you've heard they've reopened Carol Baskin's husband's murder case basically because of this show and all the attention it got.
That's weird, though, because I look at that and just think, like, what would you even, like, where would you get evidence at this point?
I think people, you know, well, it's the same thing that happened with R. Kelly, where people that had stories hadn't talked to each other because maybe they didn't know how many other people had stories. But if you watch a documentary and you realize, oh, this MF-er did this to hundreds of people, then they start talking to each other.
But yeah, let's be real. Like, you know, as I do, there was always stories about R. Kelly.
You and I know that, but where I know people who are just, oh my God, this is the first time I'm hearing about it. And I look at them like they're insane, but there were people who this is the first time they're hearing about it. I don't know how, you know, because they're our age. I don't know where they were when this case broke. But
and don't get me wrong, it wasn't like they were full of evidence, but there was enough stories like, man, I heard this crazy thing. Or somebody's like, dude, I went to the studio where R. Kelly records and I heard blah, blah, or whatever. Right. But it's like, okay, that's a lot of hearsay, but you start hearing it from a lot of people that don't associate with each other. And then that comes out and you're like, oh yeah, he's done. Yeah. You know?
Same thing happened to Bill Cosby. If it wasn't for Hannibal Buress, Bill Cosby wouldn't be in jail. As a comedian, that's mind blowing to me, but that's what it is. If he doesn't do that set, and there doesn't happen to be a reporter, I believe, from the Philadelphia Inquirer doing that set about a black comedian talking about Bill Cosby, none of that chain of events happens.
Well, there you go, man. Timing. So moving on to getting back on magic stuff, as we've kind of gotten way off rails. Yeah. There was some very... what's the right word here? Emotional, disappointing.
Controversial. It fits. It's
Definitely controversial. News this week about Wizards of the Coast announcing they will be, I would say deprecating, but it's just outright removing all of the DCI history and the Planeswalker points history will be gone from the website at the end of May. I believe it's like either May 24th or May 27th, something like that. This was on Monday when they made the announcement in the morning. And I will tell you, my immediate reaction on reading that was just like, it was sad.
Yeah.
You know, and for those of you who don't know, if you're not on my YouTube page yet, I don't know why you aren't, but go check out my YouTube channel because I had a video up on Monday about this. And I go into pretty good detail over there. But the issue for me is that the reason I even decided to follow up and do a thing was because it was one of those things that when I read it, I immediately had an emotional reaction to it. And I don't really react that way to many things. And that's what I was like, okay, I'm obviously, if I'm feeling this way, other people might be feeling this way. So I hop on Facebook and on Twitter, and there's already people sharing their DCI number with their Planeswalker points and whatever, just for like posterity's sake, and just sharing stories and all this stuff. And I'm just like, man, getting rid of this has to be the wrong answer. And I get it from a business perspective, right? Because okay. Let's just start from the point of talking about what the new world looks like. I can say, I'm pretty sure without getting myself in trouble here, that when I was at Wizards, one of the things I did get to sit in on is I won't go into detail of the process and everything, but we did talk and have actual productive meetings about producing the new world of tournament software for Wizards of the Coast. So... as an example, if everything could be absolutely the way we wanted it to map it out, you would, as a store, post an event on your whatever system, right? It automatically updates in the store and event locator. So somebody goes on to Wizards thing, says, hey, I'm going to be in Dallas on Saturday. Let me see if there's a tournament somewhere. So they look it up. They find all the stores in Dallas. They can see all the events. They can click there to register for the tournament. Right on there. And they can do this from their phone even, just using the website or the app. Sign up for the event. They can't pay, obviously, you still have to do that on site. Sign up for the event. API is included, so they can share it on social media. So now they can tell their friends on Facebook or Twitter or wherever, like, hey, I signed up to play at this event at so-and-so store on this day. So your friends see it, maybe they click on it and go sign up for a thing. Then when you show up to the store, all you have to do is check in, you pay. All they do in their system is verify that you paid and that you're there. You can go outside, talk with your friends, have a smoke, whatever. The event starts. They push a thing to create pairings. You get a push notification on your phone. So you don't even have to have a judge come, because that's one of the worst parts about events is when the round's starting, everybody has to go get their friends from outside or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, push notification goes to everybody who's registered in that event. Boom. They know it's time. They come in. They can look on their phone to see I'm at table 3 against Brian. Brian gets a thing on his phone that says I'm at table 3 against Daquan. So you just show up, sit down, play each other. When you're done, y'all both verify on your app your win-loss results, automatically updates on the computer. Done, right? Awesome. Can't do anything close to that with what exists now. The other thing is now when somebody shows up, instead of having to have a DCI number and everything else, you will get basically a universal Wizards account. So the same account you use for something like Arena would be what you use for in-house events now. Or future Magic-related games produced by Wizards of the Coast or whatever. But they would all use the same login. If you don't have a device to register on or a phone or whatever, you would just show up. They would put you in either without an email, they'd probably just put in guest or something, put in your name, and you would just be in the local store's database. So when you show up regularly, they just click your name and you can play. The problem is, when you talk about information systems, the stuff that the DCI information lives on is old. It's ancient. I mean, it started 24 years ago or something, 25 years ago. And it's obviously at one point had stuff bolted onto it and things changed and they worked on it and whatever, because it was always thought of that this is going to be the thing we use. But as time's gone on and technology's gotten better, the new stuff doesn't in any way at all talk to the old stuff. So you could, in theory, have somebody work to connect them, but that's probably like a team of 4 to 5 people, and that's probably all they do for like a year, maybe two. I mean, I've talked to people just that I've seen on chats or whatever over this week, and a couple of them dealt in information systems, and they're like, yeah, dude, we've tried to convert some people's like insurance stuff and do this thing, and just transferring that much data and making sure it's cleaned up, like, some of them, it's been like a 3-year project. So I don't know if it's even like, I believe there is a competitive advantage you give up by that not existing, right? Because you know as well as I do, you've played a lot of games. A lot of them are dead in hell. I would say 10 years, but a bunch are dead under 5 years.
Yeah, for real.
And that's the concern, right? People don't want to play those knowing that game might be gone 2 or 3 years from now. But with Magic, you have a whole history that people can reference. And when people are talking trash to each other, they can go in and say, well, dude, I'm 12-1 against you in tournaments, so whatever, right? You know, there's a bunch of fun stuff there you can do. And one of the things I talked about on my video is that there's something to be said when you're writing an article or telling a story about a period in time or a tournament or whatever, and you actually have the hard information to go reference. Because your memory gets jogged, you can tell a much more accurate story. So even somebody who didn't play 15 years ago, they might be reading an article or watching a video and can benefit from that information still existing. So, like, my perspective, and I don't know how expensive it is, honestly, but if it's even reasonably affordable, I would say keep it up for a few more years. But I don't know. What do you think?
I will talk about the history, though. It's certainly for the past, let's say, 14, 15 years of almost everybody having internet. Doesn't that history, isn't it pretty much out there for, I'm going to say, at least the top 1,000 players in the world?
Probably. I mean, even for more than that.
Yeah. Because of the way especially now that we're in the Twitch era, every major tournament is broadcasted somewhere. So
that's fair. I mean, that is a reasonable thing. Like, because we talked about this a little bit off the air too, right? Knowing how much churn there is in the player base, because I think we talked about it and somebody else mentioned it too, that, well, what if somebody just bought it and just kept it, and maybe they just made money off of ad views or whatever from people coming to the page? But the reality is, even if somebody were to buy it for that purpose, they likely only get active number. And I say real traffic, like people, somebody would always go to it, but any reasonable number of users referencing it for about maybe 3 to 5 years, 5 if you're lucky, 3 yeah. most likely. Because again, with the player churn, eventually you have enough players who just never have a reason to reference that.
If you did it, you would have to find a way to, you know, reheat the content where you mentioned, hey, kind of like this day in Magic history, this match happened.
Yeah, something like that. That's a good point. You probably could do that.
And then you could draw somebody down the rabbit hole, and while they're there, hey, what's my record against so-and-so?
Yeah, the tough thing, too, is they don't have a good system set up for people to download their information. I did see, though, and I meant to follow up, so maybe I'll have something next week, but I did see that somebody had put up, maybe on GitHub, they had some instructions that you could use your browser to actually get that information and save your own stuff as either a CSV or an Excel file, so you just have it. So you can at least get the information if you really wanted to, but it's not the easiest way.
Speaking of dead games, I'm going to go look up my MLB showdown records against people.
I don't even know if that's tracked, but it'd be hilarious if it is.
Oh, I think the last time I checked, which I'm sure has been over 10 years, it was still in the system. But
that's funny. Yeah, the other thing too, and this is a thing I don't think a lot of people are privy of, is the laws around information have gotten very strict.
Yeah.
Over the last 5-6 years. Even at Wizards, like if somebody was dealing with somebody on the phone and it involved your credit card number and whatever else, they went to a separate private space to even deal with that, to not even have that around the other. And like, granted, these are all people that are professionals. They're all working with other like retail professionals and everything. And even in that regard, right, just to do normal business, there had to be extra privacy and protections and whatever. So, no, and I can tell you too, like not being compliant will cost you thousands of dollars.
Oh yeah.
Even for small businesses. Like that was a big push, I want to say like 6 years ago when the laws started really getting heavy.
Yes.
And you had to have like, you went back to your providers and like, hey, can you meet these requirements? How much extra is this going to cost me? You know, whatever. So even for Wizards to make a deal to move that information to somebody, I don't know if it's even feasible. Like, I can't answer that question, but I know there would be definitely some very big legal restrictions on how that is handed over. And there may even be a cost with it, because I don't know if there is even a legal way with the outside company not being a Wizards entity to be able to possess that information or... Well, Wizards to strip it down enough that the other company can have it.
I would say there's a way, and I know there's a fee, but you may not be able to pay it. Facebook, for example, is able to pay it because they have all the information for most of us.
Well, true.
Companies like that can afford to pay the price. Our website project that we were spitballing before the show, that might not happen because neither of us could afford to necessarily pay it. But there are people... One of my favorite examples of that, I won't name the company because I don't want to get sued. You remember those things you fill out like, hey, it's your birthday, you get a toy or some ice cream or what have you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like when you go to like a steakhouse and it's like, hey, you fill out this thing and on your birthday, we give you like a free appetizer or something.
There was a company that had all that information for little kids, I think for ice cream or something. When the kids on the list turned 18, they would sell the data to Selective Service to make sure they got drafted.
Oh, that's, I mean, it's something you need to do, but damn, that's savage.
Yeah. But whoever came up with that idea got a raise, I promise you.
Oh, no doubt. And here's the thing. It's funny you mentioned that, right, about kids, because I just had somebody the other night while we were on Twitch say like, hey, I tried to click the notification bell on your YouTube videos, but it wouldn't let me. It said it's because the channel isn't verified to not have stuff for children or whatever. And I was like, whoa, what? You know, and then I realized when I, and I didn't even, I had to go in through all my advanced settings and stuff. And when you first set it up, I guess, as a serious channel, if you don't go in and change your options, one of the options is this video is made for children. This video is not made for children, or I want to verify this on every video I put up.
And it will shut off all your comments.
Well, if you don't click it, it just sits on, I need to verify this every time I put a video up. So I was putting my videos up and I was always clicking the appropriate box, but I didn't realize my channel hadn't had that option clicked off. So I had to go in, set it to where, no, I'm not making any videos that are being sold to kids or marketed to kids or anything like that. And now it's good to go. So even in that regard, like the way you're putting stuff out there, who sees it, where they wouldn't even let somebody, if they wanted to, click the notification bell because it couldn't be verified easily.
And I'll tell you how much changed just in the past 15 years, let's say. When I first started as a newspaper reporter, if somebody in Shreveport got shot, I, as a reporter that didn't know the one part of their family, didn't know him from Adam, could call the hospital and get all of the details about their condition.
That's crazy.
But it just, then HIPAA came out, and now they're, are you part of Billy Ray's family? No, we don't tell you anything.
Yep. Unless you got some legal paperwork, we ain't telling you nothing.
But it's crazy that at one point I had that, and they never verified if I was a newspaper reporter. They took my word for it.
Wow.
So I could have been anybody calling to find out if Billy Ray is dead. I literally could have been the person that shot him.
That's so wild.
But that was how it was when I started in journalism.
Oh, I have no doubt. I have no doubt. And I just bring it up so people understand that, like, because I don't get me wrong, I am on the side of the people. I would like that information to just be there. And for as long as it can be, for as long as I play Magic, it's awesome to be able to reference that material. Or to even have it act available so somebody else who eventually wants to reference it for some reason, for nostalgic purposes, or maybe they want to like brag and say like, oh yeah, that one time I beat Finkel in like a booster draft side event at a pro tour or whatever, they actually can go prove it, right? And they have bragging rights. It's like a bar bet kind of thing, you know? But you lose those moments if that information isn't there.
A bar bet based on somebody's booster draft. That is the nerdiest thing I think we've ever discussed. This is a Magic podcast, folks.
You know it's happened before. Oh, yeah. You know it has.
I'm not disputing it.
But that's my thing, though. Like it's those moments we don't have anymore if that goes away. And it's concerning. And I get it. I do also get it from Wizard's perspective. I do. I'm sure there's a reasonable cost to maintain that. And it's literally going to take up space somewhere on some number of servers. And it's never going to be used by the company ever again.
Yeah. I will say, since it sounds like they are going to do it, I would encourage people. You and I have both written tournament reports. Keep your own journal. You will love to go back and look at that stuff.
That honestly, when I was very active, when I was like pushing and grinding all the time and trying to qualify for the Pro Tour and all that, it was good to be able to write for some of these magazines and websites and record a podcast because I was creating a digital journal effectively, right? There was always going to be a history of things I did and whatever. And it's cool to even go back and read an old article and be like, oh man, I remember that. Oh, I can't believe I lost that. That was such a dumb mistake, you know? Yeah.
Go but back. If, man, Crawlworm is the best card ever printed. I love this.
Yeah, but that's the thing though, right? But if I didn't ever write that and it doesn't live there digitally somewhere, then, you know, it's just lost to the annals of time. And it's tough because the first podcast we did, I only even have found, I think between us, we were able to scrounge up like 3 episodes or something. And I think on my stuff, I think I only have 1 saved. I have to find the drive I saved it on, but we literally have a couple of years that just gone. You know, it got lost in the shuffle between Brainburst making their server transitions and stuff as they upgraded TCG Player a couple of times. So that's just unfortunate that we didn't think to save it, you know, and it's just gone now. Granted, being real, the quality was not the best. Like the material itself was good. the quality was not as good, but we're also talking 15 years ago.
Yeah. I lost a bunch of stuff when Entertainment Tel finally stopped maintaining their servers. So yeah, I feel you.
Yeah, it's hard, man. It's hard. So all I'm saying, I guess I say all that to say this, is that I'm on your side. I do feel that there's an emotional attachment. I do believe that there is a business advantage to them having that information to reference, talk about, people to go look at, to tell their friends, you know, like, hey, no, I've been playing Magic. This game's been around. I've been playing for 12, 15, 20 years. And like, go show them like their tournament results from the first couple times they played. And it's like, dude, see, I sucked in the beginning too, but now I'm better. And look, you know,
there's something gathering God now.
There's something there though, right? Like I don't know. But like I said, I don't know the right answer. I don't know the costs involved. I don't know maybe somebody could tell us, you know, the legalese involved with something of this magnitude. Cause you're talking about, here's the other problem too. It's not even just American law. It is literally the laws of multiple countries.
Yeah.
That'd be affected because they have information on people from literally around the world. Something like 77 or 78 countries or something. So, I mean, that's a lot. I don't even know how to begin diving into that conversation. But if you haven't gone and checked it out, downloaded your results, go take your screenshots, find a way to download it, do whatever you want to do, but you've got about a month and then it's going away. So just want to tell everybody about that. The other thing I want to touch on is, man, everybody wants to talk about companions still.
Yeah, yes.
So much. And don't get me wrong, like even on my YouTube channel, I'm making videos about every third video or so now probably has a companion in it just to try out. Like, can I make a deck with this companion doing these things? I'm about tomorrow, actually. Well, when this goes live, I'll have a third Gruul deck up, two of which are using two different companions and play completely differently. So, you know, even decks people are already playing, they're making different versions to try to use the companions. And personally, I think in Standard, they're fine. Like, they are strong, but you still run into decks that aren't playing them. There's some decks that are playing them as a convenience because it's just a free eighth card, like we talked about a couple weeks ago.
And the internet seems good. You know, free card.
Yeah, it's just free card. So in those cases, I get it. They're just kind of playing it as a bonus card, and that doesn't really matter. Sometimes they don't even have an effect on the game. There are some that are built around them, and very good. When they get to do what they do, they're awesome. The problem, I think, for a lot of people is they want to talk about them in older formats, where basically every deck that's top eighting has a companion. And that's
the time I talked as much about companions, and I used to cover Doctor Who for a living. Thank you. Yeah. I'll be here all week.
There you go. But yeah, that's a bigger conversation. And I'll just be honest, like I do believe they're going to work on something for it. I think it's still early. I mean, we're only talking what, 2 weeks after the set released. So I do accept they're strong in those formats, and they are doing some really big things. But I think you have to give stuff at least like 3 to 4 weeks to give everybody a chance to adjust and see what happens. Because think about even in Standard, for like the first 4 days, everybody's like, oh, Garuda's too good. And like getting to copy it and get another one off the thing and blah, like, yeah.
It broke MTG online for a couple of days, apparently.
Well, yeah, but I've played against one Garuda deck in the last week. And I've streamed at least, since the last podcast we recorded, I've streamed at least 20 hours. And I've played against a Garuda deck. So, I mean, sometimes you got to let it. Now, granted, Standard's totally different than Modern or different than Legacy. I totally get that. But I'm just saying, give it a week or two more. We'll get around to the next announcement, and they'll probably end up doing something about it. But it's probably all I can really say on it at this point. I think everything that's been said about companions or can be said probably has been said. Now it's just seeing if the formats adjust or not and then waiting on a response from Wizards.
And it's safe to say next set we'll probably see at least a couple of Destroy Companion and Planeswalker cards, or Planeswalker cards, I'm sure.
Maybe. I mean, maybe not. Like, you could, that would only exist if they were afraid of one or two of them potentially becoming too strong, and then they make some kind of card that, like, you can't cast a creature from outside the game or something, right? Something of that nature. But otherwise, maybe not. I mean, we'll see. I don't know. The last core set, though, had a bunch of good stuff in it, so maybe this one will have a bunch of good stuff in it, too, that changes everything, and who knows what. With that being said, we're not playing a lot of paper Magic these days. And one of the things, especially in your scenario, because, you know, y'all are opening up businesses a little bit more now, here in Washington, they're talking about reviewing stuff at the end of this month and then give it a look and see of just like, how are we going to proceed? My guess here, just because of the nature of how we treat things here, having a couple of universities here, you know, a bunch of research facilities, hospitals, I would not be surprised if they open things up here to where you can, all businesses can go to doing curbside pickup. You can maybe have up to 10 people in your venue or whatever at one time. And everybody's probably going to have to wear masks for a bit in close engagement sort of things. But I still don't think we get to where we have Magic events for a while. I think we're still at least somewhere between 2 months to as long as 4 months away. And I think that's a hard situation for people to accept, but I think we are in that zone right now. The question then becomes, though, like, well, I don't know. How do you feel about the whole thing?
Well, the problem we're going to run into, and are technically already running into in Texas, is different cities, counties, and municipalities are going to have different. For example, the city of Dallas and the state of Texas are on two different schedules.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's a conflict because, you know, Dallas is, I think yesterday Dallas said it still had hit one of its highest numbers on coronavirus. So they don't want to open things yet. But the governor is saying, hey, everybody open everything up.
That's true. I saw that in a couple of other places, too, where they said, like, hey, I don't feel good about them opening things up because we still haven't plateaued yet. You know, here in Washington, we're doing pretty good. Outside of Seattle proper, a bunch of the surrounding cities are at like 12 or less deaths from the coronavirus. So several are in single digits. So they're doing a pretty good job containing it here. I mean, I do still feel that we're going to have another wave once we get to the back end of the year, just like any other flu season or whatever. I think that's still going to happen. But I do think people here are taking a more serious approach, which has helped. And we have enough places where the risk is low. But everybody, because I went to the post office, because I also, if you follow and come watch me on Twitch, I do giveaways. So I gave away like 4 or 5 things. So I bagged them up. I was going to just print them off on PayPal and then drop them off. But like, didn't have money in my PayPal account, so it was going to take like 3 days for it to transfer and whatever. So I'm like, forget it. I'll just take it to the post office. So I went down there, had my mask on and everything. But honestly, I would say something like 60 to 70% of the people were wearing masks and or protective gear, gloves or whatever. Everybody was keeping space from each other. People weren't crowding the doorways or trying to get in or out. Like, everybody was doing their part. Even the people that weren't wearing protective gear, we're making sure they were being careful and keeping space from everybody. And I was like, you know, if you're doing that, I don't feel too bad about going into public. Now, granted, I'm not saying go and hang out in public, but if you just got to go shopping or, like I said, got to go to the post office or go get your car fixed or whatever, like, I don't feel too bad about that. But in your case, like you're saying, you're in a place where it's still increasing.
Yeah. And for our suburb, we're at about 50 as of the time of this recording. I don't believe we've had any deaths so far. But then I don't have a shop in my local suburb. I have to go to someplace in Dallas, Arlington, or elsewhere to play Paper Magic. So I had to take that out also.
That does make a big difference. So yeah, I think that's one of the, and the thing is, I'm still going to go out and buy some paper magic, by the way. Like, I'm still putting in my pre-order. When Ikoria comes in 2 weeks or whatever, they're my local store. I'm going to go pick it up. Still going to support them. Still going to build my decks and have it. Because the thing is, once... This obviously isn't going to last forever. Or at least we hope.
For real.
But realistically, it won't last forever. We will get to a point where people are out, hanging out, playing events, doing all that stuff again. When we are, I'll have my stuff and be ready to play. Right? Like, I have a little extra cash. So I'm going to still do that. Plus, being transparent, it makes good material to do box openings on stream and on YouTube. So, like, you know. But I just don't know if we can get to a world where, like, the only way I see it happening is if we say, okay, your max event size can only be between 10 and 20 people, whatever that number is they decide. And then instead of putting 6 people on an 8-foot table, you're putting 4 people on an 8-foot table, 2 on either end. So the people sitting, nobody's within more than like 3 feet of each other. And everybody will probably be required to wear masks, I would think. And if you don't, you probably aren't going to be allowed to play. Like, I would probably make it, if I still had my store, I would, one, have hand sanitizer everywhere. If I'm booster drafting, I'm going to have some nitrile gloves available. So everybody's hands can be covered up and protected while we're passing all the junk around. And then ultimately, just tell everybody, look, if you're going to be hanging around in the store for more than like 5 minutes worth of shopping, you're just going to have to wear a mask. That's just the way it's going to have to be. And I don't know, man, I've been watching videos from other countries and things they're doing. I might even go as far to have somebody at the door, like with the little forehead thermometer, checking temperatures on the way in. Just to be extra safe.
Now, the trick with that is, I'm sure you've probably seen where our body temperatures are changing, apparently. 98.6 is no longer the standard temperature.
Oh, no, I agree. But, I mean, if somebody rolls in and you're 99.2, I'd be like, hey, sorry. You know, like...
For real?
And I get it. I mean, it sounds harsh, but, like, you may not be running a fever. But it's just like, we can't take that risk, right? Somebody might die. I mean, I know it sounds messy. And agree, I'm not ignorant. I know that a fever is only one of like 6 indicators or whatever. Like, I get it. But if there are things we can do to even prevent something from happening when we see one of those indicators, should we be doing it? And I don't know. It may be for each individual business, forever, to make that decision for themselves. Like, I'm not saying I think my way is the only right way.
I got to come back with it, though. If you've never taken their temperature before, how do you know that's not their normal body temperature?
Oh, I'm telling you right now, I don't. And I'm okay with that.
Wow.
And I like, I'm just being real, man.
I get it.
I mean, okay, to take it to an extreme level here. But like, when I'm driving up by some or walking by somebody and they've got the stars and bars on their truck and a sign that says, "What would Bubba do?" Like, I don't know that this person wants to do something to me, but I know what that indicator means. You know what I mean? So I'm just going to keep my distance. I sort of feel like this is the same thing in that regard, right? You may not be sick, but you have one of the indicators that says you could be, and we don't want to risk the other 5 or 6 people in here getting something or my staff getting sick or whatever. And it's tough. And here's the thing. We've been talking about this with several people for a while. Is that it is a tough situation because you're having to make decisions you don't normally make. And you're having to base them on things that we don't have perfect data on. And everybody feels differently about it. And there's going to be hurt feelings. And it's just not easy. And the way everybody does business from here until... I would say probably at least till we get a vaccine, probably sometime early next year or whatever, right? Like, it's just going to be different until people can feel comfortable doing things freely or not putting themselves or somebody else around them at risk. This is kind of the world we're going to be in. And that means we're not going to have regular... I would be surprised. Like, here's the thing. Like, okay, so the Hunter Burt Memorial Open, which obviously big supporter of, I do commentary for, they moved their date because it got canceled in April. got moved to, or in March, got moved to August. I don't even know if we're going to be able to do that event in August yet.
Yeah, because I read something today saying that, you know, Major League Baseball season may have to outright be canceled. And if you can't play baseball, I'm thinking you can't play Magic, right?
Maybe. I mean, or maybe it has to have an event cap. Maybe it can't be 600-700 people. Maybe the cap is 75 people or whatever. Maybe we can space the room out to where 100 people can play in there and everybody be at least 5 or 6 feet apart or whatever, you know? I don't know, but it's probably going to look different.
Or can you do what some sports are talking about doing and having literally, like, I guess, just competitors play in some kind of an event where there's no commentators per se, or maybe just commentators, just players in a certain tournament. If you're not here, if you're not at the event, you can't come in here.
Yeah, that's possible. Maybe there's no side events. There's no onlookers. Like, you don't bring your significant others. Don't bring your friends that just want to hang out and root you on. Like, if you paid the entry fee and you're one of the 100 people, cool. You can come play. No extra bodies. You know, it's your 15 or 20 staff people, your 100 to whatever, 150 participants. That's it. Maybe that works. I don't know. And even then, you probably still have to minimize crowding in different spaces between rounds. And, like, logistics are going to become a mess, man. It's going to be hard. The thing I do look forward to, though, is when this passes and we get back to doing normal, like, the first couple of big events people get to go to, like the first couple of Grand Prix or the first big Players' Championship, you know, like, those are going to have such a huge response and coverage is going to be so big. And it's like, ugh, that's going to be so good when that happens.
I'm going to cry more than likely, and I won't be alone.
I might, honestly. I was just thinking that. I was like, you know what? If I was in that space after you've been separate and everything's been so different and so hard and you've made all these adjustments and people have had to get fired, get rehired, go search for, you know, all this stuff's happened and you finally get back to, like, normalcy, we'll call it, that's probably going to be an amazing feeling for people. So that's why I'm one of the reasons I'm supporting my local stores anyway, is where I can help them keep the doors open so eventually they are there and we can hold on to that piece of normalcy when we get back. The same way I've been every single stream, I've been trying to preach to people, hey, you know, still support your content creators, support these other things in the community that you like, so those people can keep doing this in the future. Because eventually this will go back to normal and you will want those people around. Whether it's them doing commentary on a thing or people like us doing podcast or streaming or YouTubing or cosplaying or, you know, whatever it is they're doing, support those efforts. Because though they may not be able to do them or do them to the level they want right now, they still want to do it and they're still good at it. So reward them as best you can. And even if you can't support them with finances, because I know a bunch of people are going through tough things right now. The two things I tell people is, one, if you have an Amazon Prime account, even if you don't use Twitch regularly, go sign up on Twitch, find somebody that in the Magic space, and just give them a subscription. You get to give one away free every month. It's $5 straight from Amazon's pocket you're giving to somebody. And by the way, Amazon's making dumb money right now while people are ordering from home. They don't need that extra $5. Like, it's a free thing. You don't even have to sign up for. You literally will sign up for Twitch. You hit a button that says, oh, I also have Amazon Prime. And then now once a month, you get to go give a free subscription to somebody. That's a way you can literally give $5 to somebody every month with no effort.
It's one of the best things Twitch does, really.
Yeah. And then the other I tell people is share the content for the people you want to support. Like, if you watch me on Twitter, sometimes I'll just retweet somebody's stuff talking about, hey, I posted this video today on my YouTube channel. Or, hey, check out this thing I'm sharing over on Facebook or whatever. Like, just helping people be visible and get their name out there might get them somebody else who can support them financially or sign up for a Patreon or buy their merch or whatever it is. Just because you're not in the situation to do it financially, you can still support them in other ways. So at least do that to help everybody get us back to our world of normal, if we want to call it that.
My world wasn't normal before. I don't know about you.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying, if we're going to use that term. So yeah, it's going to be a weird time for a little while, man. But I think we're going to get back there. It's just, how do we do it?
And Tish and I realized today for the first time, this is going to be the first time parents are happy that the kids get out of school.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so this week on the dinner table, we have, this is more of a wide topic. And it's something that's come up because as I've been pushing more on YouTube, and I do a lot of research. You know as well as I do, when I'm into something, I want to know what I need to be doing to be different, you know, watch all my numbers, do all that stuff. And the thing that blows my mind, I guess it doesn't blow my mind because I understand human nature to a point, but why do so many people support such angry content creators? Like, it is the craziest thing. Like, there's this one guy. He used to work for one of the gaming websites or something once upon a time. But but now he's separated. Now he's just this, like, angry dude that gripes about everything, and everything's got to be ridiculously full of sarcasm. And honestly, he's just, like, I tried to watch a couple of his videos. Which, one, I'm sad I even gave him the views on YouTube. But, like, I don't get, like, there's some, like, I get it. Like, they're at least presenting a negative perspective well. And you're like, okay, I get it. Like, this is a person who just brings up all the stuff people like to complain about and misery loves company. I get it. But then there's, like, this dude who's just loud and he's got a bunch of, like, he's saying things that it sounds like he thinks are funny, but they're just stupid. And he's got, like, some stuff where he's got dumb costumes on that don't even look good. And I'm like, why? Why does this dude have like hundreds of thousands of subscribers?
You're not going to say his name, are you?
No, I'm not. I try to be professional.
I'm almost positive I know who it is. Well, you can tell me if I'm right.
Everybody. After the show, we can talk about it. But not to, okay. So there's this other one, and anybody in the magic space who watches a lot of magic YouTube, you know who I'm talking about. There's a channel where they never even have magic on the screen. I say never. I've seen probably 10 or 12 of their things. There's never been magic on the screen. They're always playing some video game, oftentimes like a first-person shooter or something, first-person perspective game. And all they're doing is griping about something in the magic universe while they play this video game. They don't even have their face on there. It's just their voice. You hear them while they're playing this video game. And the dude has tons of subscribers. Like, okay, and here's, okay. This type of channel, right? One, you're not even really sharing magic. That's the first thing. You're using magic as a vehicle, but not even doing anything to support the community. Like, two, you're not even putting your own face in front of your comments to be held accountable. Because you can come on, you can see me. I'm plain as day. Like, you want to come on? Like, I'm going to say anything. I'm willing to stand by it.
In fact, maybe do a face reveal, because that's a big thing on YouTube. Maybe he'll do a face reveal with so many subscribers.
Maybe. But the other thing is, some of the stuff he has is completely off base. Like, he's complaining about a thing and doesn't even have his facts right. And I've challenged him, and they're like, no, how do you know? I'm like, because I was there at the time this video was made, and I know that's not a correct fact. Like, I know 100% fact. I have been sitting in the room when that decision was made that he's griping about that's not true. But this dude still has tons of people subscribing to his channel. And I'm like, why? Why do people want to say? Because here's the thing. Like I said, I get it. When somebody at least, like, say the professor, right? If he goes on and he's upset about a thing or he disagrees with a thing, at least he tries to bring somebody on from Wizards to do an interview. At least he's trying to present some facts, and he does a product review where he's testing it different ways and then says, well, this is why I don't like it, right? So he's being negative toward a thing or a product or whatever, but he's at least presenting it with facts, and he actually does a good production on his channel. Like, totally get it, right? No problems there. But the other dudes I've been talking about, it's like, there's another dude, and this one's really me going off here, but like, this person sits at a disheveled looking desk, doesn't even look like literally looks like they might have rolled out of bed and went straight to their camera. their space behind them isn't even clean. Their sound quality is all kind of like weird and echoey. Tinny is the word. Almost like it's reverberating off a little bit off of like a metal can in the distance. Some of y'all probably watch this channel, know who I'm talking about.
Yeah. But
like, why did this person get tens of thousands of subscribers? I'm going like, they're putting in no effort. They're not presenting themselves well. Like, it's just, oh, it's so painful. It's so painful. And it hurts. And I'll tell you why it really hurts. When I see other people that I can tell are trying to get their facts together, trying to get decent quality equipment, trying to present facts in a professional manner, whatever. And then that person's like, I saw it. There's a new channel. And I wish I would remember the name, but you can tell the person is just starting out. They're trying to do like a magic news channel, right? And they're doing like a little news desk, right? He's got his little desk and he's got his suit on and he's got a black backdrop behind him and, you know, puts his visuals up to like the upper right quarter, you know, like just like a news channel, right? And he's talking about things. And I'm like, you know what? This person only has, I think right now, as of the other day, he had 12 or 13 subscribers, but still a new channel. But I'm like, you know what? People should be supporting this person. They're trying to do the weekly news. I think weekly. He might be doing like every 3 or 4 days, but I think it's weekly. Trying to do the weekly news for Magic. Present it properly. He's putting the time in. He even has a little thing where you can see like his outtakes where he's like trying to reshoot things and whatever and get it right. And I'm like, this is somebody putting in time. Support that person. Somebody who's trying to give something positive to the community. Give them something different and a different presentation. And they're really putting in effort. Those are the people we should be supporting. And I'm sure playing even more video games, you see a lot of those negative channels.
Video games, even going back to my journalism career, I worked for a section called Friends and Neighbors that was providing literally nothing but good news. It went away because nobody was reading it.
Doesn't surprise me at all.
The obituaries are still, as we discussed earlier, that's still the most read part of the paper for the 10 people that still read newspapers. People say they want the happy stuff, but the numbers don't bear it out.
Fair. And I will say this too. I also give a pass to people where, like, being snarky is kind of part of your brand. Like, that's a little bit, like Sperling, right? He does the sick of it thing, right? He uses sick of it as his handle. He does the sick of it article every time like a new set comes out. He comes up with like the 10 or 20 things he dislikes. But as a person, he's a fine person, right? There's nothing wrong. Like even the stuff he presents outside of that is actually pretty reasonable. So like, it's just part of a shtick for a thing he does that he sticks sick of it, right? So that I get, like that's part of a gimmick. You know, I can get past that. Like, you're basically playing up something for a brand or whatever. That's totally different.
What's the deal with?
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what it is, right? So that I kind of get. But man, these other people, I'm just like, they just seem like angry people. Like, they're angry on YouTube. They're angry on Twitter. You know, they're angry in articles they write. And I'm just like, what's the reason to... Like, part of me seriously wants you to say, if this thing makes you that angry, why do you still participate? And that's a real question. Like, because if anything in my life made me that, if I bought some macaroni that made me that angry, I ain't never buying that brand again.
I'm going to check with you again during football season, because how angry do the Cowboys make you every Sunday? Yet you still participate.
Cowboys don't make me, here's the thing though. The Cowboys don't make me all that angry though. Like one or two plays might, or like, you know, having crappy defense, just like, well, your players just suck. I mean, I ain't going to be that mad about it. I know the reality going into the game. Though, by the way, they had an outstanding draft this past week. Just want to point that out. But I really, and here's the thing too. I am glad to see there are people out there like Mr. Beast. You know, for people who don't know who Mr. Beast is, he's this dude from, I think, South Carolina. Who I think he started out as a streamer. He was a video game streamer. And somehow he just got big. And he decided he was going to use his powers for good. And started doing stuff on YouTube. And then started doing these challenges where he was either trying to raise money. And then he was doing fun stuff with other YouTubers who were like, all right, whoever can stand in the circle the longest, I'm going to give you, you know, $10,000 or whatever, right? And it's good content. But then he started, like, he has videos where he goes out, literally found one of these little small car dealerships, used vehicles that has like 12 vehicles in a lot or something. Basically buys all the vehicles, takes over the place for a day, and just gives cars away effectively to people who need, well, I mean, he sells them for like $5, but, you know, basically gives the vehicles away to people who need them. And the dude gets, he has video, like his, I swear his videos get like all 5 and 10 million views.
Oh, absolutely.
Like he has some, I don't know, he has some huge number of tens of thousands of subscribers. And I'm like, you know what? I love this. And I've recently seen some people who were, I guess, friends of Mr. Beast that have started doing stuff like that on their channels. And I'm like, man, this makes me feel good. That there's at least people out here going, you know what? Yeah, I'm making a lot of money doing this, but can I do something positive? And by them doing something positive, they're being rewarded for it. So I'm hoping this trend continues for at least another year or two, especially with all these people that are going to be losing their jobs and everything else going on, that hopefully this trend continues. Because I know it sucks for him because Mr. Beast did a lot of physical things and did a bunch of stuff where he's trying to get people to do these challenges. Or like I said, he spent $1 million and got some 18-wheelers and drove around to food banks and just filled them up. Like, obviously you can't do that right now. So he did do a fun thing, though. He got a bunch of the different big YouTube personalities and did a 32-person rock, paper, scissors tournament.
I saw some of that.
And it was cool because they all got on board. And Jack Black was one of them, too. Like, so he had celebrities in there, too. And
Black is a YouTuber now. I don't know if you knew.
Yeah. So they all ended up raising money. And I believe that as of when I saw it, I think it was Sunday or Monday, they had already raised $4.5 million. And I think their goal was $7.5 million within like the next week or something.
Wow.
So yeah, so like these people are doing great things. Like, support the people that are doing positive things. Like, let's try to turn it into a trend. You know, and it's cool because I've had people specifically even say on comments on my YouTube channel and on Twitch, say the reason they hang out is because like I am more chill and laid back, or I at least try to present more facts or inform them on things they don't know about or whatever. And that's drawing people to the channel. And that was such a good feeling to hear that, because my thought was, okay, I'm going to do this, but I'm pretty sure with like my demeanor, I mean, let's exclude that, like, I'm older by comparison to the average Magic player. I'm also a Black guy, blah, blah, blah. Like, I have these other things that kind of put me outside the normal sphere, right? So I already know that's going to be a little bit of a hurdle, but I'm also like, I'm not going to come in here and like sensationalize things. I'm not going to overreact to stuff. I'm not going to like be fake excited because something happened, right? If I'm excited or I'm sad or whatever, it's going to be genuine. And I don't know if people are even going to respond to this, but you know, here we are. I'm on pace to be monetized now, right now, assuming if the pattern stays, probably by August or September. And that's pretty cool. I thought it was going to happen like, you know, 6 or 7 months later than that. So it's cool to see that people are coming around, and maybe we're just in a time where that is the trend. Maybe people are finally getting tired of those other things. And now there's enough people that are taking the positive approach. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe this is the Mr. Beast effect. You know, maybe people see enough of that stuff and go like, man, I kind of want to be like that. And maybe, you know, that's a thing.
If you look at, for example, there's usually like at least one, probably, I'll say, for example, in talk shows, it's Ellen. Ellen came out when Maury Povich was the industry standard. You know, you, everybody else is doing You Are the Father. And it, although now they're saying that maybe Ellen is out of character, not that nice. But her show is about, you know, being nice to people.
That's true. Like, Ellen's a tough one, because that's another one. Like, we'd heard stories for years about Ellen. And then, like, last year, I think she had an issue with one of the trans makeup artists or whatever that had come on her show. Or the person had come out as being trans, I think, and came on her show. And she was like, eh, it was cool being on the show, but, like, everybody wasn't as nice as you thought they were going to be or whatever. And then now there's all the stuff about, you know, her production and all that stuff with everybody being laid off or whatever. But I get what you're saying, though. Her show is pushing
that she was really nice. Where if you switch to the other channel, it's literally every other channel is you are the father, you are not the father, or Judge Judy, who is obviously her whole character is that she's gonna, even if you're in the right, she's still gonna cuss you out for the most part.
Oh yeah, I think though I will say this too, and from my own personal experience, I did a video talking about the what's it called, the Secret Lair Ultimate Edition with the fetch lands. I did two videos. I did one that reacted to the interview that the professor did with Blake from Wizards of the Coast. And then I did one just talking about, is it even worth buying at the current prices? And when I talked about stuff on both those videos, I was like, well, you know, here are the reasons why I would or wouldn't buy it. You know, if you're in these very niche groups, sure, buy it. I don't think it's worth it for these reasons. Here's why I won't buy it. And I presented the facts and the reasons or whatever. And oh, actually, I can give you a better one, actually, to pivot here. Talking about the Mastery Pass on Arena, because the most recent Mastery Pass was still it's still $20 or $21, whatever the equivalent is in gyms. But it's like a 3 or 4 week shorter season than last season, so there's fewer rewards. Though I will say, looking at it now, they did include some draft tickets, which I didn't notice before, and that kind of makes it a little bit better. But anyway, people were complaining. It's like, oh, well, I'm getting less things. It should be cost less or whatever, blah, 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 right? And then I looked at it and said, well, if you look at the rewards are relevant, are comparative to the season length. So something like Theros had more rewards because the season was longer. Ikoria is not as long, so it doesn't have as many rewards. Like if you go all the way back to Eldraine had an even longer season and had even more rewards. So we kind of have to look at it more as a price per week more than per season. Otherwise, you would be in this weird situation where to keep it comparable, you would have like a $12 season and then you'd have like a $30 season or whatever. And it's easier probably that Wizards should just say every single season the Mastery Pass is just going to be whatever the $20 equivalent is, and we're just going to call it good. And then we'll just give more stuff if the season's longer and people just get more value when the season's longer. And I even said in view, I said, you know what? If we get to the end of the year and there's another long season that's like 11 or 12 weeks and there aren't more rewards, then I will come back on and I will actually do a video saying, okay, cool, this is now an unfair value. But until then, the pattern shows this is what makes sense. So as long as this holds, we should be fine. I had a dude come on and just gripe. Like he was like, I don't understand how you keep talking about this and value and price per week and blah, blah, blah. Why aren't you just talking about making it cheaper and saving people money? And I was like, well, of course people want it cheaper. People want everything cheaper, but that's not how business works. So there's not an argument there. There's not a discussion to be had. That would just be saying, here are reasons Wizards could make something cheaper. And that's it. I was presenting the reasons as to why it probably is the way it is. And then saying, here is a thing we can compare it to. And if it doesn't change, feel free to come back to the channel and you can see me complain about it. But that person will likely, I'm sure he was the one negative thumbs down on that video or whatever.
Yeah.
And he will just not be a consumer of my material. And I'm okay with that. Like, oh, I'm not trying to cater to that person.
Or he will. He'll show up every month to tell you that you're wrong.
And I'm fine with that, too. Like, you still came and watched the video. You still came and gave me my one view in 8 minutes. So I'm down. But I think that's it too, right? You have to decide as a content creator what your voice is going to be, how you're going to speak to people, what you're going to support, what you're, you know, all that. That just goes into that. And that's kind of where I'm drawing the line, and I'm okay with it. Same thing with you. I mean, when you're on there streaming and you're playing your games and, like, I'm sure there's people that come negative at you or just want to gripe about your team makeup on Madden or whatever.
Oh, I mean, I gripe about numerous glitches that are in the game and have been in the game for 5 years, because at that point I feel like it's warranted. You know, you've had
sure
a little while to fix this. But again, like you said, when they do something that I like, I give them credit for that too.
But if that's one thing. If I can ask anything of our listeners this week, think about who you are supporting, who you subscribe to, whose Patreon you're on, who you follow on Twitter, and decide, like, how much positivity are they bringing to your life? how much are they really talking about valid things, or how much are they just complaining? And even honestly, think about what makes this person happy. If you follow them regularly, you see their content regularly enough, like, are they even a happy person? Like, and is it making you happy to listen to their stuff? Do you feel better when you consume their content? If so, great. Keep on keeping on. If not, consider going and finding somebody who is positive and sharing their stuff, or go hit the subscribe button on YouTube for them, or go turn off your donation to the other Patreon and go give it to somebody who is positive and help them out. And especially right now, in the situation everything is in the world, let's use this as a time to start turning the corner and, you know, use the power of positivity for good or something. But on that note, I think we're going to wrap it up. We're starting to run a little bit long.
That's good stuff. I don't mind going along if we're having a good conversation. I feel like our listeners don't mind either. Tell us if you think we sound crazy, if we've talked too long.
For sure. But anyway, Brian, why don't you tell anybody how they can find you on social media?
I am DL Caesar on Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram. And our family channel is Alan's Ever After on YouTube.
Now, you can find me just about everywhere at Power Dragon, PowerDragon. And you find me regular streaming on Twitch on Tuesdays, Mondays, and Thursdays, 9 p.m. to midnight. You can find me on YouTube every day lately. And recently, I've been doing just about daily videos, kind of uplifting little one-minute messages over on Instagram. So you can follow me there as well. But I think that's going to do it for this week. So wherever you are listening from, whenever you're listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. And take care of yourself and stay safe out there. If you have a chance, please check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook at Color of Magic. We're also over on Twitter and Twitch at ColorOfMTG. And we have a website you can check out, colorofmtg.com. Please share our episode with your friends and help us grow our base. As always, every little bit helps, and we appreciate your support.